waiting for the recording. Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Raul Henson, and we're now in our second episode of my podcast, The Medicine of Success. Our guest for today is a good friend. He has been with, I've knew him since college and the med school days, and his specialty is the highly specialized field of sleep medicine. And during our med school years, 20-something years ago, there was no such thing as sleep medicine specialty. So now we're going to talk about his journey as a doctor and how he went into sleep medicine. And we're going to talk about sleep, the importance of sleep. So Dr. Michael Sarte, welcome to the show.
Dr. Raul Henson, thank you so much for inviting me. And it's an honor to be able to be part of your show once again. And thank you to the listeners. Good evening.
Yes. So how are you? And how's everything with the COVID and the lockdown?
As with not only the medical community, everybody else, and initially, it started in our own community, and then we found out that there are more cities involved, and everybody is probably almost in the same page of being in that staying at home mood or that staying at home ruling or recommendation to keep away. It's different. We've never really experienced something like this in at least in our lifetime. We know that something similar happened about a century ago, but it just so happens that it happened again this time during our time. So it's different. You know, so many people are getting sick, trying to get home, trying to help people as well, if not by just making calls, doing some telemedicine, or just really trying to help in any way that you can. So that you can help other people in need, especially regarding their health.
That's great. That's great. Now let's talk about how you grew up, high school, college. Can you tell us something about it, about you?
Yeah. I've been living in Pasig City. It's actually probably about 10 to 15 kilometers away from the capital of Manila. I grew up here in Pasig, and I went to the nearest high school, which where I grew up in. I live in a barangay called Capitolio. It's in Pasig, and then nearby, the nearest school that I could be taking my high school was in La Salle Green Hills. So it, not only high school, but also grade school. So my primary schooling was there, secondary schooling or high school was there. I stayed there for 11 years.
So, and then after high school, what decided you to take up medicine?
Yeah. Not growing up in a really strong medical family. If there was a doctor in our family, it was probably the brother of my grandfather. So my grand uncle. Aside from him, I'm not aware of anybody else in the medical field. So it was really recommended by my dad because both parents. I come from a family of five siblings, and they wanted at least one of us to become doctors. And when I was a kid, they noticed that I was tinkering a lot of stuff at home, some electronic stuff, some do-it-yourself things, some model making, miniature model making. So they noticed that I wanted to do things with my hands. So they thought right away that I might be a good surgeon. And aside from that, they had friends also, in fact, who were cardiologists, and they asked me if I wanted to be maybe a surgeon or a cardiologist, because they saw that in me. And so, you know, it just so happens that I really love science, and I've always wanted to know things about science, not only about health, but also about from science fiction to nature to marine, to the science of marine biology. And actually, from there, I decided that maybe I do want to really get into a medical field, science than medical field. So I have to thank my parents, of course, who were the ones who guided me when I was in high school, not only high school, then grade school, then high school, and all the way going to college. And that's actually the reason why I took biology, that we took biology in college, Raul.
Yeah, in UST.
Yes, in UST. That's correct. Yeah, I went to UST, the oldest university, or is it the second oldest university in the country? But definitely a lot of tradition in University of Santo Tomas, and I wanted to, and I knew that it was a good, very good medical school, and of course, knowing that it was a very, it formed a good foundation for a lot of doctors that we knew. Definitely, it helped me decide to apply there and continue my education there.
Okay, so we went to college. We were together actually in biology in UST, and then we were also together as batchmates in medicine. And then after medicine, of course, we part ways, right? We have our own field of residency programs, what you want to apply to. I went into ophthalmology, and then you went into ENT. Then why ENT?
In connection, Raul, with me wanting to do things with my hands and going back to the guidance of my parents, specifically my dad also, he was the one. It was my dad. My dad was a pilot, by the way, and he, of course, wanted to look at all of us as siblings, and in me in particular. He, as mentioned a while ago, he knew that I wanted to do things with my hands. He said that not just being a surgeon, I think you'll do well becoming an ENT. You know, ear, nose, and throat, head and neck surgery. Especially in that area. He never really asked him. He just also asked me how I found it and said I had fun. And truth be told, initially, I was torn between going into cardiology or becoming a surgeon or an ENT head and neck surgeon. But eventually, my thought process was drawn into being a surgeon, and I do admit that I had fun in my exposures in the medical school, in internship, in ear, nose, and throat, head and neck surgery, and that's why I pursued it. I told myself, I think I'm going to like being an otolaryngology head and neck surgeon, and that's why I went into the residency program.
That's nice, because we have medical students as listeners or interns now, they want to decide on something that they want, they should actually go for something that they want and would love in the future, because you're going to be more passionate with a specialty, right?
You know, that's very true, Raul, because it's in connection with anything that we do, anything that we take up, and anything that we see ourselves in the future, if you don't enjoy doing it, it's really going to be like work to you. But when I went into ENT head and neck surgery, I told myself, if I'm going to do this, then I have to enjoy being a specialist in it, because I don't want it to be, I don't want to treat it as work. I want, as you said, it has to be a passion. you have to love what you're doing so that it will become less work. And you know that aside from helping people, you are also improving yourself. So that is absolutely right. I think that doesn't only apply for getting into a residency program, but it applies for so many other things or career opportunities as well. You have to like what you're doing, and of course, going into this specialty and hopefully retiring in it means that you love what you're doing.
Exactly, like my father, like all the previous greats in ENT, you know, like all your bosses, they retired in ENT because they love what they do. So we're in the same page there, Mike. My next question is, okay, you're now an ENT, and then suddenly maybe you had crossroads, right? How come now you're in sleep medicine? I think it's a little related because in ENT also treats snoring, right? And snoring comes sleep apnea, and then I think sleep medicine. And why dive into sleep medicine all of a sudden?
That's a very, very good question, Will, because during my residency program, I was a senior. ENT is 4 years. When I was third year, about to become a full senior resident, we had postgraduate courses. There were foreign speakers coming from all over, as what other specialties have, annual conventions of the society. It just so happens that we had speakers in our conventions that was talking about snoring. And when they were talking about snoring, they were talking about a particular procedure to eliminate snoring. It is actually called LAAP, laser-assisted uvulopalatoplasty. So when lectures were being given by these specialists from outside the country, from abroad, I said, you know, since I'm already working on the area that causes snoring, which is partly in the nose, a big part in the throat, why not go further? Look, what else can this concern teach? What is a bigger picture in connection with snoring? And I realized that outside the country, they were already organizing the field or the subspecialty of sleep medicine. So it really came at a time, and you're very right, Raul, it really came at a time where things were still not established with regards to the specialty of sleep medicine. In fact, in Europe and in the U.S., I am aware that they only organized in the late 80s or even 90s. Which means that, you know, and since I started my training in the mid 90s, it's clear that they were just really organizing the data, organizing the theories, organizing the principles into books, into journals, into researches that were to introduce this new specialty, because it's not just about snoring. So because of that, I wrote a professor who lectured here in the Philippines. It just so happens that he's a professor who teaches in a university in Germany. And I applied for a scholarship. I applied for a position. I applied for a fellowship program. So yes, so that's how things started to roll. It all began in my residency program when I saw that there was not a lot about sleep medicine yet. And I said I wanted to find out more about it and hopefully be able to introduce it to the country, especially in the realm of the relationship of ear, nose, throat, headache surgery with sleep medicine. Because at that time, there were other specialties like pulmonary medicine, urology, pediatric pulmonology in the country, all right, who already had training in sleep medicine. There was no one else yet who had a formal training in sleep medicine at that time when I decided to get into it.
Okay. And now you are head of the sleep medicine department, is that right, in the medical city?
Yes, Raul, you're right. I am I'm the unit head. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Unit head. Okay. Okay. And that was a nice journey from med school to ENT to sleep medicine, and somehow it's serendipitous. And I could see your passion. Do you still practice ENT though?
I still do, especially since a big part of the anatomy dealing with snoring, it's really part of the area that is my specialty. So if we're talking about sinusitis, tonsillitis, definitely I still practice ENT. But after doing sleep medicine for almost 20 years, it's really clear that patients have already known me more as a sleep medicine specialist. My practice of ENT is just probably about 25 to maybe 30%, and 70% or even more is already sleep medicine.
Okay, that's nice. Now we know that who Dr. Michael Sarte is and his journey. Now, what let's talk about sleep and its importance. How do you define sleep? I mean, how do we know if you had a good sleep, Mike?
Very good question. You know, first of all, it's sleep is it is a condition where physically our eyes are closed, all right, and it's a phenomenon that our mind is going to a different stage or it's different stages from being awake to going sleep, all right, but it is reversible, all right. So it's a phenomenon where you physically you're seen lying down, or sometimes people sleep waking up, but their eyes are closed, and they go from the awake. Our brain waves starts to change from showing that we are in the phase of being awake, going to sleep. All right, and our mind goes into the different stages of sleep, so that it's going to give us a rest that we deserve after a long day. But to answer your question, how do we know if we did get a good sleep? It means that the next day when we wake up, one word comes to my mind. When we wake up, we should feel rested. Synonymous okay. with rested, we should feel refreshed. That's how you can tell that if you had a good night's sleep.
Okay, so that's a good quality sleep then, right? But the next question is, how much sleep do we need? Some people sleep 4 hours and they feel refreshed. Some people need 8 hours. So how do we know if we sleep well or if we refresh? I mean, you feel refreshed even with 4 hours sleep, some people, no? So how do we know? How do we know?
That's a good question. There are a lot of factors that play a role or play contribute to giving us quality or good sleep. To answer your first question, there's no hard and fast rule regarding the number of hours that we should sleep. It's very, very hard to push it on anyone and tell them you have to sleep this number of hours. Okay, the data is clear that the longer we sleep, the better. And that is also true. If we're going to talk about duration, I'd probably say 6 to 7 hours is healthy. But it doesn't mean, and in your last And as you mentioned, that some sleep 4 hours and they're good. That's not wrong, because there's still a genetic predisposition, among other things, that play a role. I would probably give a number of 5 to 8 hours. If you're within that range and you wake up refreshed, you can do your job optimally, you're alert, then that is the number of sleep that you need. All right, so that's very important.
Okay, so if the next day you kind of feel refreshed and then you kind of feel sleepy in the afternoon, does that mean that you didn't have a good sleep?
It's possible. To add on, and especially with regard to your question, in addition to duration, you cannot just rely on that. You also have to have depth or quality. All right. So sometimes we are focused on just the number. It's not the only factor. It's the number of hours of sleep is important. But equally important is the quality, which means that you have to go into the deep levels of sleep in order to become rested, which means that when we hit the sack, when we go to bed, we start to sleep in the so-called shallow level of sleep. Yes, shallow level of sleep has its merits, but the restful stages of sleep are the deeper ones. And that's where you go from the deeper slow wave sleep to the even deeper, what we call rapid eye movement sleep. So it has to have, your sleep has to have not only shallow, but deep, shallow, deep, several episodes of that, 4 to 5 cycles of that, in fact. And so what I'm going to say is, in connection to what you're saying, you wake up in the morning refreshed, but in the afternoon you're sleepy. It means that you might have gotten a good duration, but the depth is not enough. Or you might have gotten a good depth or quality, but the duration was not enough.
Okay, I got it. So now I feel my duration is okay, the depth is not enough. Can I take a nap? And how long? In the afternoon or something?
Yeah, you know, the nap, some would call it a power nap, allows a lot of us to, that's why they call it a power nap, short of helps us to energize. And the answer is always, in connection with what a nap really is, the answer may always be yes, because if you just follow what a nap really is, it's at most maybe 15 to 20 minutes, then that's okay. The problem with those who take a nap and they take a longer 25, 30 minutes or even more, they're already going to the deeper level of sleep that they should otherwise get at night. And the problem with getting into the deeper levels of sleep is that if you get to the deeper level of sleep, you may have a problem sleeping at night. That's one thing. The other is that if you go to the deeper level of sleep and somebody wakes you up in the afternoon, you may have it. You may not feel good. You might even have a headache. See, so a nap is okay, just as long as it's just a nap.
Okay, I got it. Now, when we were chatting during our today, and then I mentioned about this doctor. You know, I've heard of Dr. Michael Ruse. And he was introduced to me by in one of our courses. Not really introduced personally, but you know, I listen to him sometimes. And he talked about chronotypes. Have you met him, or do you know about this type of chronotyping?
Yeah, Michael Breus. He would speak in conventions. I'm not sure where I listened to him. But yes, he is well known in making in the data that is related to chronotypes. In fact, he introduced it and he would talk about it. That's yeah. I know of him and I know of his work.
Okay, I got it. We don't need to get into Dr. Michael Bruce, but maybe you can recommend him. You can just Google him and watch him about chronotypes, because what type of chronotype you are is how many sleeps you get, something like that. So anyway, now we go to the, like, for example, not really treatment, but sometimes you don't, you can't fall asleep. And can you drink like those melatonin products like Sleepacil or any other herbal products? You know, I'm not into those chemical ones that, you know, that, of course, they're going to ruin your sleep, really. But are the melatonins, the herbals, are they good and effective?
There's data about sleep aid, okay, because we're going to have to categorize medication to help us sleep. And if we're going to talk about the pharmacology, and we talk about melatonin, they can be classified as sleep aid. Okay, so that's why we're very, very careful with medications for sleep, because nothing beats natural sleep. However, as all of us are experiencing challenges or stress in our possible challenges or stress in our everyday activities and our occupations, sleep can be helped or aided. And where melatonin comes in, and even herbal preparations come in, so goes also the data and research done. Now, if we're going to talk about something to help us sleep, and we're talking about something that is natural, the most data is with melatonin. Okay, so you mentioned a brand. There are so many brands. Okay, and there are so many preparations, but as I mentioned earlier, I do recommend melatonin because it is also part of we have our own natural melatonin, and the exogenous melatonin is only there to help boost our own natural melatonin. The herbal preparations, though, for example, you have a brand that has melatonin and other herbs. It's the other herbs that may or may not help. So that's the concern we have. And as what has been spoken of in several sleep conferences, in several sleep meetings, and also in the books and also in the journals, herbal preparations for sleep, some of them may help you, some of them may not, and unfortunately, some may have bad effects or side effects. And that's why I would be very, very careful with these, because they are, unlike melatonin, which has so much data and safety profile is quite good. It's not, herbal preparations are not in that league.
I got it. How about for melatonin? Do you have a specific milligrams for that? Like, you know, just for our viewers, listeners. I mean, not viewers, listeners.
Yeah. Actually, if we're gonna talk about our body clock, melatonin is usually secreted between 9 p.m. to 12 midnight. Sure, some melatonin is still secreted after 12, but not as much anymore. Which means that, for one thing, if you're going to take melatonin, you have to take it at a good time. And the best time is to be 9 to 12 to help with the boost. And secondly, the one that has the most data is the 3-milligram preparation. Okay, so if we're talking about melatonin, your 3-milligram preparation, I would give it just once or twice. Okay, it depends also on the person or on the patient. If he's a bigger patient, I can maybe recommend 2 or even 3 tablets. For a regular sized person, 1 tablet should be enough.
Okay, now we go to traveling. You know, a lot of people travel. Well, not now with the COVID, of course, but once people start traveling, they get jet lag and everything. Will this melatonin help in recovering from the jet lag?
Very good question. The answer is yes, because in fact, melatonin is really more for those who are traveling. And jet lag falls under what we call the circadian rhythm. sleep disorder because there's a different time, you're in a different time zone. And melatonin helps you get into that time zone quicker. So yes, the answer is yes. There is actually a, there's an instruction of how to take it if you're going to travel, especially in a different time. If you're going to different, if you're going to travel in a regular, in the same time zone, you know, that doesn't make sense. Okay. But if you're going to travel to a different time zone, specifically more than 7 to 8 hours, then definitely you might need melatonin to help you adjust quickly to that time zone where you're at. All right. If it's less than 7 to 8 hours, you may not need it as much.
Okay, so in, like, for example, United States, definitely you need.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the other side of the globe.
Yes, that is correct. I you know.
Or Europe.
It's more difficult, in the, especially if you're going to the east side of the U.S. And, you know, the time zone is even more different. Or in Europe, that is correct. That is right. So I would recommend that for my patients to travel in those, as far as those areas, yes.
Okay. So now I pretty much understand now, because I used to travel a lot. Before, like last year, I used to travel a lot. And I didn't really use melatonin. I just used my natural powers to for my sleep. But it usually takes me a week. But then again, I want to thank you for giving us a rundown of what sleep and what it can do for our body. Now, can we talk about the field of your sleep medicine? When we were in med school, it wasn't really there yet, actually. Is it very popular now in the Philippines, the sleep medicine practice?
We meaning my co-sleep specialists, established or founded the society in 2002. So our society, called the Philippine Society of Sleep Medicine, began at that time. And we've been slowly building up the numbers. Right now, certified fellows and readers account to about 40 or 40 plus. So if you're looking at a almost 20-year society, that's not very much. But I can also understand that since the training only started several years ago, and there's not, initially there was not a lot of training institutions. Now it's also, the training institutions are building up in number, but not very much as well. So there is a lot of interest, yes, but the training institutions are not as much yet, because if we're looking at the number of sleep centers or sleep labs in the country, they're building up as well in number, but for our population, it's still not enough.
So for future doctors who want to go into the sleep specialty, sleep medicine specialty, I think it's pretty much still it's in infancy, right? If you go to like the provinces, the really the boondocks in the scattered islands around the Philippines, I think it's a good specialty, right?
You know, you're right, Raul. I would recommend for your listeners that if they do wanna, especially for the young doctors or for even the medical students who would want to go into sleep medicine, I would recommend them first to have a certain specialty. Like, you would probably have to go into neurology, ENT, head and neck surgery, psychiatry, pulmonary medicine, pediatric pulmonology, because locally, if you want to be a specialist, I'm sure that this is the same also in the U.S. You have to first have a you have to first become a specialist if you're an MD to get into a sleep medicine fellowship program, because sleep medicine is already a subspecialty. The training is only a year. Okay, after that you take another exam. But definitely, it's a very fascinating subspecialty. So, as you mentioned, infancy in the provinces, oh yes, there's a lack of not only labs, but doctors in so many provinces in the country. So it is a very good specialty or subspecialty to get into.
Yes, I think in Pampanga, I think there's none. People have to go to Manila to do their sleep studies. I think so, right? Because if I remember right, in Angeles City, there's none. Is there?
You're right. In fact, Medical City, there's already a Medical City Clark, okay? And the Medical City Clark, of course, the main is where I work. It's in Medical City Ortigas. And I've been coordinating with the executive committee there regarding testing patients. At the moment, there's a third party that's already testing patients. So, which means that patients are tested in the Medical City in Clark, but the machine is brought there by a third party. Actually, it's by another company, and I'm the leader of that company. So, if you have any patients who are close to that area in Clark, and they go to the Medical City there, they usually channel these patients to have themselves tested in that hospital in the Medical City Clark, and they are serviced by this company, of which, as I mentioned a while ago, I read and I furnish an official result.
Very nice. I think the field of sleep medicine is catching up. I know it's in the infancy. And for our listeners who want to go into the specialty, I think you have to go and speak to Dr. Mike Sarte and ask him for a recommendation. And let's talk about, hey, Mike, you know, we've been together for like, we've been friends since, I think, 30 years, because since college, you know, I've seen you grow and I've seen you succeed in life. You're now the head of the sleep medicine unit in a Medical City. I just have a last question for you. You know, this my podcast is titled is The Medicine of Success. And we talk about medicine, we talk about your journey in medicine, we talk about your specialty and some of the diseases you treat. But I also want to know, what's your secret to success, Mike? What made you, because, you cannot just be a head of a unit in the Medical City. You have to have that, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you, what's your secret to success, Mike?
You know, thank you, Raul. Before I answer that, you're right. I remember, just going back to what you said, you know, we've been together since 1985 in USD, and how much is that? That's not only 30 years. We even went to this, medical mission where we couldn't find food to eat, and we were at the beach or something with a few, after a mission, I think, we had a mission, and then we went to a resort, and I'm not sure if you remember that, and we had to look for...
I remember that. We were like actually in a, it's like a educational trip.
Yeah.
Zoology.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
I remember that. We were looking at corals and everything, you know.
Exactly. So yeah, we grew up together, Raul. You and me both. That is correct. Yeah. And it's always been a pleasure and seeing you, our batchmates, but us as friends grow. And to answer your question, experience, the books are there, the theories are there, but the practice and most importantly, the patients are our best teachers. They teach us that, number one, we can be better doctors, better specialists. They teach us that the best reward is not financial. they teach us that helping patients will give you that intangible feeling of success, and it will fuel, to answer your question, it will fuel your thought process in saying that if you want to really be a better version of yourself and in the end become successful, you have to keep you have to keep growing, you have to keep number two, you have to keep improving, you have to number three, you have to keep helping, number four, you have to keep reading, all right? And I have to say this, Raul, you have to keep praying. Among those that I mentioned, growing, reading, helping, you know, I think they are all entwined. That in the end of the day, when you can do that, when you do it, that you're reading, you're helping, you're not thinking too much of the financial reward. Of course, it's important, but not being that as the goal. And then you become prayerful. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself in that situation. So I never really thought about it that way as being a success in medicine. But if I were to look back and get into giving a recommendation, giving pointers, giving advice, definitely with your drive to help, everything follows. But one factor that should not be left behind, and in fact something that can really push you forward and guide you, because it certainly is doing that to me as we speak, is prayer.
That's a very nice conclusion to our interview with Dr. Mike Sarte. Actually, I give you one last phrase. Success equals happiness, and happiness equals growth. Growth equals progress. I think that's the way you put it. And plus prayer. Right, Mike?
You could not have placed it in any better way, Raul. That is exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you. Thank you, Raul.
Okay. So, Mike, thanks a lot. Some of our listeners want to hear or know where you are. Can you just tell them where they can get in touch with you?
Yes, I am the unit head or the consultant director of the Medical City Center for Snoring and Sleep Disorders. My direct line is 8706-0109 or 635-6789 local 5211. I'm in room 1519 of the Medical Arts Tower of the Medical City. The Medical City is located in Ortigas Avenue, Pasig City. It's right beside Meralco.
And on that note, thank you very much, Mike. Dr. Michael Sarte, it was a privilege having you as guest in my second episode of my podcast, The Medicine of Success. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Raul, and more power.
Okay, so that's it, folks, for my listeners. You can catch me in Facebook. I have my Facebook page at Raul Henson and my Instagram at Dr. Raul Henson. And stay safe, keep safe, and God bless. I'll see you in my next episode. Good day. Mike, tapos na.
Galing.